My hats are just always, well, I take my dog for a walk every day.
The recording has started.
He didn't take him, he said he was small.
I love it.
I don't know what that has to be anything, but. So I did check into the Zoom trees.
You are on this call to old age.
That's kind of, that's not.
And I did go away and I was like, it was my.
I must have just missed you.
You saw me coming, you just, I saw a car tearing out really.
Get back to work. Out the back door.
And all I saw was smoke in the tire.
When I get a deal for a Northern State table, I hit the gas and I go.
If I got the family plan, can I?
All right, good deal.
Otherwise, I'm family.
Mayor, I show after 6 o'clock. I've got the recording started.
Thank you, Bill. All right, it is March 1st. Can you believe it? We're in March. It's 6 p.m. and I am going to open the City Council study session. And we don't have it listed here, but would you all accompany me? Say, what's the name?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. So we, the business tonight is our fire department, the levy business. Oh, yeah, I'm going to turn it over to you. Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, so I put together the presentation on paper as well as electronically. We discussed this at the Finance and Information Technology meeting last week. So this is a repeat of that with some additional information spread throughout. So on page 2, just want to first give a little bit of background. So the general fund is the city's largest fund, and there's a lot of things in the general fund, legislative activity, judicial, executive, the finance department, IT, planning and development, engineering, law enforcement, EMS, or fire and EMS services, and then a couple of other small areas. So our general revenue has to support all of those areas. And you can see from that table there, have a breakdown of our revenues and expenditures in the general fund. These numbers include updates that we're going to bring to council in our upcoming budget amendments that reflect all the changes through the end of the year and the labor negotiations. So you can see there, we still have some work to do to tighten up the budget as much as we can from what we already have done. And that there is no extra money in the general fund to provide additional fire and EMS services. And then on the right is just a breakdown of our expected revenues for 23 and 24. Mm-hmm. Our main sources are property tax, sales tax, and then you can also see their intergovernmental revenue. But those are generally a form of taxes, the EMS levy, and other funds we get from other governments. That's just a quick background of our overall funding sources in the general fund. On page 3 is a little bit farther breakdown on fire and EMS services. It makes up about 33% of the expenditures in the general fund. And then you can see the specific revenues that come in from our fire EMS. The county levy is really the biggest one, and then transportation fees as well. But again, the expenditures are greater than the revenues there. So our fire EMS services are funded by those general revenues in the general fund. Any questions about that quick overview?
So in the 2024 revenue is expected, it's less than what we've taken in 2023. And in the services, it's, you know, I mean, all of it kind of adds up to being a bit more or less about 100,000 or 50,000. Is there a reason why it's not increasing if the community is growing?
Which line?
So it's page 2, and it's going to be like a number of them have a small decrease, such as charges for services. It was at 1422 or 1.422, yeah. And it's at 1.372. Yeah, that's like a $50,000 decrease. But would it be an increase if we look at growth? Or
There's a lot of line items in there. So we address, like in the budget, we have each individual line item. So something could be present in 23 and not expecting the revenues in 24. I don't know off the top of my head, but I do have it all the support.
Do you guys anticipate a decrease in 2024 of revenue coming in by 100 grand over what we had or what we anticipate 2023?
That's correct.
And that's, and generally, that's just because of the.
I think there is probably something specific in there, but I don't have the backup with me. But I can certainly get that for you. Any other questions?
No, I think that was a good question.
So on page 4,
well, I have a question, but I don't even know that it's even measurable at this point. But I do know that we've had to brown out station 2 because we don't have people to fill the positions on certain days. So obviously, that is revenue that's being lost by the department, by the city. And is there any way to measure? Even though we're taking more calls, is it kind of a wash? Are we really taking in about the same? Or are we losing revenue through all of this? I mean, I know it's kind of a vague question and it's not really measurable, but I think it's something that needs to be taken into account or not. I don't know your expertise on that.
I would say it's hard to say like which calls are going to result in revenue for the city. Well, if they don't meet certain criteria, they can't be billed out, or there's a lot more complexities, I'm sure. Frank knows even more, and the assistant fire chiefs, Bud and Jerry, who do a lot more with that in our EMS billing clerk, but we do lose some revenue to not being able to take our own calls.
You figure like right now, on average, we were running about 140 to 150 transports month, and this month I think we were down about 25 to 30 in transports. So on average, if you go by our GMT federal standard, they look at an average deal of about $2,050, I think it is. Maybe a little bit more for the federal standard. We obviously don't get that after insurances have their limitations of what they'll allow us to bill, or they write off a ton of that stuff, sometimes 50-60%. And then we get some of that back with GMT funds. So on a high end, you're looking at probably $60,000 a month that you could expect or you could bill for that we're missing out if we're losing 30 transports. But on the weekly reports that I send out that Charlie forwards to all of you, we're having anywhere from 24 to 70 or 80 hours a week we're not able to fill scheduled shifts because of our staffing issues and concerns. So we are leaving some money on the table with transports, not that we're in the revenue generating business. We'd like to decrease our call volume if at all.
To maintain staff. I mean, we got to have that money if we want to keep station 2 open to answer the calls. And so other cities are actually acquiring that funding and we're losing that funding, correct?
And some of the, we're like, I think that first year, I think we had Mount Vernon and/or Burlington come into the city for calls like less than 15 times. And this last year, that was, I think, over 40 to 50 calls that we have actually come into our area. So we're missing some of those. But when we're fully staffed and we have all three rigs covered during a day, we'll often see our folks help with the secondary calls in Burlington and Mount Vernon and those places as well. But right now, we don't have the ability to staff up to handle those either. And that is lost revenue. How you would determine how much of that is be hard, but if you're down 30 to 40 calls, you could say that that's at $2,000 of transport. It's definitely revenue we're leaving on the table.
So if there's a call that goes in and for station two round out, then another city is going to come in and take that call for us, and that's what's happening. And then is it $1,000 for transport or is it $2,000 for transport?
The GMT federal standard that we base a lot of our stuff on is about $2,200 a call is what it costs us to run that. The transport fees on our website, as you can see, there are the same across the entire county. So we have a mandate by contract where we all bill the same, whether it's Anacortes, Mount Vernon, Burlington, us, or Arrow Skagit. So if it's a BLS call, I want to say it's around $750 plus mileage. If it's an ALS call, it's a little bit more than that plus the mileage. And then the determinant is, you know, what services they do while they're en route. If they give, you know, one medication, it is one rate. If they give two medications, it jumps up a little bit. Rachel would be able to put that out for you exact, but. And an average transport with the mileage and everything is definitely over $1,000 usually.
So how's that going to impact us overall? So if this is the trend that we see happening now, by the end of the year or even halfway through the year, how will that impact your staffing, the need to purchase equipment? Because you're probably going to feel a pinch this year, I'm guessing. Or am I incorrect?
No, I think you're right on. One, when you're down on staffing, the other folks have to pick up the load. We, as you can see in our numbers, we used to carry about 30 to 40 volunteers. And even with our two academies that we did this last year with the ARPA funds, we're still down to 27. So we brought on 12 folks over the two academies plus the academy we did outside, bringing in some folks. And with people getting hired, even bringing on those 12 folks, we're down over 13. So we have a 25-person swing overall. So when you normally staff three rigs and you're down one, even one day or a majority of the time, that increases the amount of call load on the other two that are in service. So that kind of helps with our hurts us with our retention and our morale and puts a lot more burden on those volunteers that we have. Out of the 27, we have about 13 to 15 volunteers that really put in a ton of time and are some amazing people. And we want to keep those folks around too. So
in the past, you've had between 40 and 45 volunteers, right? Mm-hmm. Now you have 27 on the books, but half or less than half are the ones who are really showing up for the fires. So you're down. You're significantly down in health.
Yeah. We have a core group of volunteers. All of our lieutenants and captains and our battalion chief are all part of that volunteer program. And they're all on scheduled shifts. So every 10th day, one of the lieutenants or captains is covering a night or a weekend away from their family and on top of their full-time jobs. And they're taking on a lot of that pressure and responsibility and doing an amazing job for us. And a lot of them are also taking extra shifts on top of their normal battalion shifts they used to cover just to fill some of those open spots that we used to be able to fill with our residents or volunteers.
So I think, you know, that's really wonderful to hear that. But I guess just coming out of the background that I come out of, what I hear is burnout. And, you know, that's, people need to be with their family. They need to be with their friends. That's a way of really rejuvenating yourself. And your staff, unfortunately, isn't able to really do that. as it sits now. So what would it be like having 4 or even 8 more employees? What difference would that make in the morale, in the covering of the shifts, in the generated income that you need to keep moving forward as an efficient fire department?
I think that would help tremendously. And that's what Kelly's helped me kind of put together some numbers of what that looks like. And in talking with Mr. Allen and Owen and the Public Safety Committee last year, that was what they asked us to do this year, is bring this forward as far as the levy lid lift. So then we talked again with the Finance Committee last week. And the issue is, you know, we're the only department in the city that relies on 70%+ of our staffing is volunteers and on-call folks that come from home or are doing this on top of their normal job. So we've done such an amazing job for so many years. Now we're at the point where we got to, as Klinger used to say, it's not if, it's when. And we need to start looking towards when we're going to be able to do that and how we're going to fund it. Well, we're at that point. Now, how do we make it happen? And how do we get the buy-off from you folks and the community to fund this and help us move forward in that direction? And because really, if you look at the numbers here, I broke it down, and Kelly has it on here, between us and Burlington and Mount Vernon and Anacortes, the amount of call volume that we have versus the personnel that we have in comparison to them. We have 8 full-time line staff. Burlington has 24. Anacortes has 25. Mount Vernon has 50. Of course, they do a lot more call volume than us, but we've been on par with the Burlingtons and Anacortes's from year to year over the last decade. But we've been doing it for a lot less funds because we have phenomenal volunteers and part-timers that have stepped up. But now that those numbers are starting to diminish and we're having a harder time recruiting folks and getting people to come in and do the job and the training that's necessary, It's hard. In this economy where we are now, where it's hard to staff even amazing jobs that are $100,000, $150,000 a year, no one wants to come and do that work. It's hard to say, hey, we want you to come in and do this for next to free. It's tough.
Chief,
we have some good people that do it.
I think you just hit it on the head, though, is at how much money. How much could we put out to other departments if necessary? Do the people, taxpayers, need to absorb $11 or $12 million in the next 5 years? That's why we're here. And I understand you want to run a first class operation, but are there any alternatives to some of the unpleasant news I read?
And I think, in order to staff all the seats that we're currently staffing that right now with the part-timers and the volunteers, we would need the 16 folks. And I fiscally, I can't see that being an option. I don't think that the community could handle it. I don't think our, as Kelly can show you here in the next few slides, the cap space is really not there. That's going to be tough. So we're going to need to continue to rely on these part-timers and volunteers and take care of them and build that culture and lean on them more and more just to stay at status quo, but without even adding extra. So I would truly like to see the 4 or the 8 extra folks come on. Now, can we sell that to the community with the status that we're in right now with the financial problems and the taxes that are already being increased? It's going to be hard. But
kids don't want to work anymore.
So one of the things that I see as a trend in here, though, is when you're doing this and in this comparison, the volunteers then disappear,
yep.
Right? So if you're looking for 8 in the future, you're talking about 8 union. And then the volunteers then disappear as we phase into becoming Burlington and Anacortes and Fred.
That would be my biggest
reality.
Well, that's that's the trend that we're going to without wanting that as a reality.
Right.
Because we're down from the 40 plus to the 27. But I would like us to continue maintaining that number and driving it up if we can. That would be my wish.
Right. And so just some feedback and some things that I've heard from some people interested in volunteering. One was there was advertising for assistance or help in the office posted at $20 an hour. At the same time that we were advertising for fire help at $16 an hour. That was advertised as you could be a high school student, you could be this, you don't need any credentials, you don't need any work experience, this, that, and the other. Fire department requires training. They will provide training, lesser pay, taking risk. So right then and there, people were like, why would I do that? I can make $4 an hour more, take zero risk, and go file paperwork. I mean, quite honestly, just feedback that I've received.
And that's valid feedback. The issue that we have is we got to follow the FLSA standard.
Right.
And we have volunteers versus paid staff. So a volunteer, we can't pay by the hour.
Right.
So we're paying a stipend. So they're not getting, and when I started, you know, we were getting $3 a call. You got paid once a year, and we went to every quarter. And you have never been paid by the hour. You're volunteering your time, mm-hmm. and you're getting a reimbursement for your services, the wear and tear in your vehicle, the mileage you put to and from, all that kind of stuff. So we have limitations of what we can give them.
Right.
I mean, I would legal love to give these legal limitations. Right. Otherwise, they're not eligible for the volunteer firefighters insurance. They're mm-hmm. not eligible for the volunteers retirement. We don't meet the FLSA requirement. Some of these folks are amazing, and I would love to give them everything we can if we had it.
Mm-hmm.
They deserve it.
Well, and the majority of the volunteers are there because they want to be, right?
Exactly.
Like they have bought into the culture that existed in years past, that you came in and you took care of your community. You showed up and you took care of your neighbor. You took care of your family. You went into that burning building to take care of the people because that's what you did. You took pride in that. You were there, the brotherhood, the whole circle that existed. And that culture, from what I see, is fading. And this is a repercussion, whether people want to acknowledge it or not. It's a hard reality to the outcome of what has happened with the amount of growth that has happened so fast here without being foreseen, without having the infrastructure set up and all of the housing and the growth and everything else that has gone on, not to mention the issues that have happened in Olympia, the legislative stuff that has tied people's hands and allowed for more calls and more issues. It is a repercussion of all of it. And so it's just, I understand the needs. It's just, unfortunately, hard to swallow. And it is a huge burden on the taxpayers for decisions that were made years ago, right? Because these high density housing that's coming in here and all of the additional heads and the additional calls that are going to come with it, that's a hard reality. Is it has created situations that have led to this. All of the additional calls that are coming out because of different things. COVID has allowed for additional calls. And unfortunately, we lost a couple people in those transitions, in those situations. And I'll just be real honest and tell you that there's also, I know a handful of people that would volunteer if there was a mandate dropped, you know, but it hasn't, so they can't. And that's just some of the feedback and some of the hard realities that we're in.
I agree.
I've got a question for you, Frank.
Yes, sir.
I'm not up to date on the operations of the fire department. I don't know their inner operations, but I see here on the administration chief plus two assistant chiefs. Why are there two assistant?
What was the question?
Why are there
two assistant chiefs? One deals with operations and EMS, the day-to-day scheduling, the rigs, the fleet. The other one is dealing with not only the assistant chief of training, he's also dealing with fire marshal plan reviews. So just the workload itself.
Those are salaried people, right?
So the numbers we're going to be presenting in here, you can see we have the 8 full-time firefighter paramedics, and we're just giving a couple of scenarios to if we hired on 4, 8, or 16 additional staff, so they would be firefighter EMTs. Page 4 is just a summary, really, of the need that Frank just went over and just a comparison of the other jurisdictions. And then just wanted to give a little bit further breakdown on slide 6 of what we're paying for. There's a little bit more information than what was included at the Finance Committee meeting. So really, we would need to pay for wages and benefits, training for all of the new staff, uniforms. It would increase our overhead. And then we've also included some much needed new radios, which we hope to get a grant for, but weren't able to receive. So new radios, which are much needed, as well as bunker gear. So I given, and it's kind of small, but a breakdown of the costs over 5 years for 4 additional staff, 8, and then just type there 16, if you would like to see exactly where these numbers come from. So we did think on the next slide 7, we did think really hard about how we could fund this. Is there any other way than property tax and a levy lid lift? And these are just kind of some of the things we really considered, that these are continued operational expenditures. So we should pay for them with continued operational revenue, things that we know, money we know can come in. So one-time funding, we have received one-time funding in other areas, the ARPA, so our American Rescue Plan Act federal money, that's one-time funding. And so are other federal and state grants are one-time funding that we're not guaranteed. If we went out for something, which we haven't found anything to go out for, we'd never be guaranteed to sustain that revenue. And then some of the other tax collections, we don't have a lot of control over. Sales tax collection, other taxes, the utility taxes on water, electricity, natural gas, those things that the city doesn't provide, we don't have a lot of resource to make significant changes. There's caps to what you can charge on those. Licensing permits and fees are always contingent on the market and aren't huge revenue sources for the city or consistent. And then one other area we've looked at the past is utility tax on the services we provide. So sewer, solid waste, and stormwater. Right now, our utility tax is at 10.5%. So to fund some of this, if we got 4, we would need to increase that to about 20%. And if we did 8, we would need to increase it to about 29%. I don't think any jurisdictions around us are even close to that. That would be pretty big numbers for people. And we don't see that as a great option. It's always there as like our very last resort to increase that, but didn't see it as a good choice to fund this.
I think the proper way to go about this thing would be to levy the general public has to be involved.
Right.
They need to vote on it. It needs to be their project, you know. And I think that's a proper way to go. That's the first shot at it, because I don't want to see the utility tax go up to 20% or whatever. That's going to kill the people who see the world.
Well, that in itself throws out the reality of the situation, because I agree it really needs to go before the people. So we're looking at a $30 a month increase if it's 8 firefighters, which is getting by, like you said. A 29% utility tax, when people were, you know, they were kind of upset a little bit about the property tax, city property tax. I think that was $27 a year. So $30 a month more for this, plus the utility tax that went forth last year. If I was to see a 29% increase on my utilities bill, that'd be pretty alarming. And that's in essence like what we'd be doing, just in a different form with property tax. So, you know, I mean, we're shuffling the numbers around, but ultimately, if you were to equate it that way and people were to look at it, they're going to be voting on a 29% increase on their utility tax. I don't think so either.
Right now, with the way everybody is right now, I mean, I was getting phone, we have nothing to do with the school district, and I got phone calls about the school district, the county mistake on taxes.
But it still went up.
It went up considerably, but.
Not from 367 to 14.
No.
Yeah.
Right.
I think it's pretty alarming when I saw that.
But I think I'm going to tell you, as a senior now, I can do that. I'm only here for another 10 months. If we enact some of these increases that you are proposing or putting in front of us, I will be a former resident of Cedarwood.
So let's say that I have a heart attack in my house and you don't have anybody to respond because they're already en route to the hospital with somebody else. How long does it take for ambulance to get here from Burlington? How much extra time would you expect that we'd wait?
If they're in station and they're available? Mm-hmm. 8 minutes, 10 minutes?
How long after my heart stops, if I'm in full cardiac arrest, do I have? You know, how much longer are we going to ask people to wait for services? Put it to them, let them make the choice. It's literally their lives and their
families. Can you afford to live here, Joe?
I can.
You're young and you're working. What about other people that are stuck in low-paying jobs and retired
as well, right?
You want us all to leave?
No, but I want them all to have a choice to vote on it. Let them have the choice.
Well,
I think
okay. I mean,
everybody's in agreement on
it. People have to go to the vote.
Yes.
But, you know, don't be a smug young kid, you know, like, oh, I've got good money. I can afford all this.
I think Nick has.
I think it's going to the voter. I think that's what we all, like Chuck opened up with, and that we pushed this right to the voter because of the substantial increase that's there. Whether it passes or not, it's on the voters. It's how it's presented. It's the reality of it. $30 a month or how it's done during this time, like Sarah said, it's a challenging one. And I talked to you today about that just this year. You know, obstacle that you face in that increase, but it would go before the voters.
If you two, Kelly, I'm sorry, and Frank, if you looked at alternative, I mean, to present to the taxpayers, are there alternatives?
Alternatives to a property tax increase? We didn't see any sustainable alternatives to operate, like continued operational expenditures. One of the things Frank brought up in one of our planning meetings is, you know, if you use a less sustainable revenue source, which we haven't even found, like we haven't found a grant or anyone else to support this, you really have to think about who would want to come and work for Cedarwood, not knowing that the position is even going to be open 5 years from now, you know,
or even a year from now. So Brendan, I see that you're online and I want to give you opportunity to make comment or ask questions if you like. I don't want to forget about you.
Okay. I appreciate that. Thank you. I do have a couple of questions and a comment. Do we know what the time is to get someone that's brand new to being a volunteer to the point where they are sufficient enough to be on a shift? And then how long do volunteers usually stay a volunteer?
Well, a Recruit Academy is taking a little over 200 plus hours. So once we get them onboarded and get them into a Recruit Academy, you're looking at the, you know, we'll usually do like a Tuesday, Wednesday, or Tuesday, Thursday night and a Saturday afternoon. So when you get up to those 200 hours, then they get to go and wait for an available state testing process. So a written test and a practical skills stations. And then they go to hazmat awareness and operations testing. So we've been averaging about 4 to 6 months to get them through the entire process if they pass the first time. And then we have a probationary book that's another 40 to 80 hours of time on them when they can get around to it between their schedules and our trainer schedules and getting the sign-offs and proficiency completed. So you're looking at 7 to 9 months, and that's without becoming an EMT. And with 80%+ of our calls being EMS and us doing the transport, we're sending all those folks either at first through EMT or right after that. So we're usually looking at a solid year to get someone to be able to be on the schedule and be fully functioning. And years ago, we would have volunteers. If you look at that, we talked about in the beginning, that core staff of 13 to 15 of those 27 volunteers, the majority of them are all firefighter and EMTs and have been around 10, 12, 15, 20 years plus. The problem, though, is a lot of our folks were kind of like an internship where you come in, you get your credentials, you get some calls under your belt, some experience, especially with us having the transport capabilities. Now they're getting to work with a paramedic provider and learning stuff that other agencies don't have to offer. So they're very marketable. So with the staffing crisis that we're having in this region, in the state, that's where we've lost those 19 plus folks over the last year, year and a half. They're getting these positions down south. But some of our residents where we used to keep for 2, 4, 5, 6 years before they got their first job, we're lucky to keep them for 18 months. I have two folks on my desk right now that I'm doing background checks for that are in processes elsewhere as we speak. So.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's a long time to onboard someone, and they can quickly find another opportunity somewhere else once they're trained up.
And we've been lucky with the ARPA funds last year, being able to put on our own two academies was really beneficial. Before that, we've been lucky. District 3 down in Conway put on an academy a couple of years we used. But being low on staffing, it's hard to, when you can't fill the schedule, to also fill enough folks to be able to put on these academies too. It's another constraint for us. But worth
gotcha.
It.
Yep, I would say so. Well, thank you. Another question I had was, with Burlington and Anacortes being in, was it like the 25 full-time employee range? Is that mostly just because their sales tax is much higher? I mean, like Burlington's population isn't higher than Cedar Woolley's, but are they able just to fund that many more full-time because of sales tax?
Yeah, definitely. If you look at we were comparing the levy cap room that we have in comparison to Anacortes, just they are actually putting the same kind of levy lid lift on the ballot, I think next month or in April, pretty soon. And they're looking at adding, I think, 8 paramedic firefighters or EMT firefighters and I think 6 law enforcement officers as well. But they're only going up like 15 cents per thousand because their general fund is compensated with a lot more tax dollars that they have to, or we don't. So, and we're currently at $1.80, I believe, Kelly.
Yeah.
And they were only at 96 cents. So their budget's a lot bigger than ours, but they have a lot more sales tax revenue to generate from.
Gotcha. Thank you. Just the comment I have on this is, I think that the community's usually supportive of police and fire, but I do agree with what other people have said, the timing. I've had a lot of people say that they're never going to vote for another levy or bond for the schools or anything. And I think a lot of that is just frustration from the miscalculation error. But that's the general feel that I've gotten from the community too. So I think the timing of this might be a little bit delicate if we're trying to pass it.
I agree, sir.
Would it make sense to repackage the whole thing? Because, I mean, we're looking at Burlington, Anacortes, and Mount Vernon. They're full-time firefighters. They're more of a structured setup. We're heavy reliant on volunteers and part-time firefighters. And then we're asking for additional funds to help sustain, even though it's already been proposed that that's not even going to accommodate growth in any way. So we might be coming back in 2 years or the fire department or the city to ask for another levy increase more. But repackage it to be something that's more structured and comparable to other cities, because like Sarah said, that's we're shifting into that kind of a mentality. We want to have the volunteer staff here in training, but if we're reliant on that, then we're running into challenges. So if we were to do that, say, okay, well, we want 16 firefighters full-time and not the part-time ones and then volunteers, it still leaves you a little shy on the thing, but you're structuring that in a way that's comfortable with other cities. Does that make sense? Right now, we're kind of like, we're trying to limp this along by asking for $30 more from all the residents, which is a tough ask for sure. But then that doesn't get us into tomorrow. That gets us today. And so next year, the year after, especially if we have growth or anything that happens, we're going to run into this again. And already that, I think that, because I was shocked when I got my taxes, I was like, that's just like Brendan said, that feeling of that is already there. You can't take that back, even if there's a correction. It's just like, that's a shock. So a lot of people probably aren't going to, you know, look at it that way. So would it be time to restructure how the fire department in Cedar Woolley is and accommodate more full-time, using the part or the volunteers as more of a learning opportunity for them to move into fire departments or fire departments? That was the case.
Well, the problem is you don't have enough now.
Well, that's right.
That's what you're proposing. I mean, it doesn't change the numbers. It changes the proposal. So the numbers remain the same, but instead of like, okay, well, we're looking at limping this program along and keeping the status quo, it's presenting to the community that we have changed in the infrastructure is this, and this is what you would need in order to accommodate that structure.
We're proposing moving from 8 full-time people to 12 or 16
full-time. Yeah. 16 full-time people, you would still have the 8 part-time and the 27 volunteers and then 3 administrators. Yeah, assuming that they stay the same, which kind of sets us apart when you look at the graphs, because like you said, we're one of the only that have the volunteer. So that's a great training opportunity. It's a great advantage to all of Skagit and a lot of other places. But if we utilize that not as like, oh, we're volunteer reliant, but we're volunteer accommodated. You know what I mean? And that becomes an asset to not just draw in talent, but to draw in more volunteers for training purposes, because we're not asking so much of them. We're accommodating that growth and that learning experience. So you're just kind of repackaging how that looks, the appearance of that.
Well, we're in the same position as the police department was 2 or 3 years ago. They solved their problem by running a levy. And Frank knows how much money he needs to operate on. And I'd say, go for it with a levy, and if it don't work, then we have to do something else. But that would be the best way, and then you got the general public involved, and there's nobody that gets out of line or upset or the anarchy or whatever. But I think that's a fair way to do it, and that's the best way to do it. And everybody wants the fire department, you know, and the EMTs and the ambulance service, and it's a great service to the city, and they know they need it. And it'll be tough passing one the way the economy is, but it can be done.
Frank?
Yeah.
Oops. Finished.
I'm finished.
Frank, just a question now. With the growth going out to the west, what are your anticipations for a need for a new fire station?
We're within our boundaries. So we built the second station up here on the hill with the thoughts of the growth up in the north end. So,
but the west end seems to be growing quite a bit. Are you going to have to expand to that or not?
No, because we're pretty much set up to handle all that now. Because there really can't be much more growth as far as density than what we already have. So our urban growth area, I think the way Coleman explained it was, we only have room to the north now up here above, is it Jones Road and up around Bassett back up to Station 2. So density wise, that's as much as we can probably go with the farmland and stuff out Cook Road and that expansion there now. Population and the density and the traffic, and that's not going to grow. Can't see call volume going down anytime soon. While we're looking at other options, if you look on here, Anacortes put on a community paramedic a little over a year ago, and that's helping with driving some of those numbers down as far as the folks that need the social services and the other interactions and those kind of things. So we're looking at options of partnerships for the future with that. But we're all kind of in the same boat. Call volume's going up. Staffing is becoming more of an issue for everybody. And we're lucky right now as far as the revenue we're bringing in with those transport dollars and insurances and Medicare and the GMT funds. Is that sustainable? That's a huge help right now because that's 70% of our revenue is transport fees and those other services. But we gotta have the staff to fill those ambulances to be able to make the calls too. So.
Yeah, thank you.
So I think our next step would be considering a ballot measure. And we would write that up and propose it to council, but need to know what to put in that. So on slide 9 is a breakdown of potential options we could go to. So there's kind of 3 main categories. The first one is 4 additional firefighter EMTs, then 8, then 16. 16 is kind of a long shot, and something we don't think we can get to, but 4 or 8 seems doable. So in each one of those, there's kind of 3 categories. So for the 8 additional firefighter EMTs, their option 4 is how much we would need to just break even after 5 years. So in the 6th year, the general fund would start to go negative for these services. Option 5 there is the dollar amount of additional levy we would need to break even at 10 years. And then in the 11th year, we would need to reconsider. Do we need to do something else and evaluate the general fund revenue at that time? And then option 6 there for the 8 additional firefighters is an amount that can get us through 10 plus years. And of course, all these numbers are estimates, so we're just doing the best we can with the numbers we have. But really, it's deciding where on this scale we want to fall and what we want to ask from voters. Whether we go 4 paramedics or 8 paramedics, we don't recommend the bottom of that scale where we're in the negative at 5 years. That is not sustainable for the city.
So I think what I was saying with the language part of that is that are you looking to word it in a way that we're desperate, we need the services, and that's what it kind of sounds like. And so kind of what I was talking about is more opportunity. We have an opportunity to to secure our fire department with a full-time or four full-time, whoever the council decides, as well as provide the training grounds for volunteers unlike anywhere else in the county. So I see it as an opportunity, and I see it as if we package this or put this forth to the voters, it doesn't need to be in desperation. It doesn't need to be in something where we're going to fail if we don't do this. It could be something where it's like, hey, we can secure the eight or the four people in the fire department and provide the opportunity for more volunteers to come in. It'd be really cool if somehow we could figure out a way to get around that mandate, or if the mandate drops, which doesn't make any sense with today's information that we have, that the vaccines don't do anything and don't stop transmission. So it's pointless for our fire department to put themselves at risk utilizing that when there's provable data showing it does more harm than the good. So if that's out of the way, people can make the choice, and you would have a lot more volunteers, and you would have a solidified fire department bringing in, like, hey, we're a training ground. We're a breeding ground for the best of the best. And so I see it as an opportunity, and that's how I would factor it.
There's certain things we have to include in the ballot measure. So like the wording that's put on the ballot doesn't leave a lot of room for additional explanation. There's the sections, if you go to your the pamphlet, well, if you go to the pamphlet, there'll be further explanation. But just numbers wise, there are things that we have to put on there. So we have to put on there the percent increase. So here, option six is 8 additional firefighters, firefighter EMTs. And we would need an additional $1.4 million, and it would increase our levy, just the city's portion, 47%. So we would have to put in the ballot measure 47%.
Can you put in there option one, option two, and option three being zero, so you can give them a 4-person, 8-person, so that they have choices? Because a lot of times when people are looking at this, this is a service provided to them, right? Like, nobody wants somebody to lose their life because they weren't able to get there on time and you're waiting for somebody from Burlington. I completely understand that. And I think our residents and our community understand that as well. There is a good support system in our community, but can we put two options on there for them? Because a lot of times you'll end up with one.
I don't know.
That's the thing we'll have to ask the
county. Yeah,
about. I think we would have to pay double. That'd be pretty minor in grand scheme of things.
Right.
I think the question might be whether we can use the public and how we describe that. But right. We could certainly ask the county.
In the language used, but if you can provide them with options and people feel that they have a choice, whether it's all or nothing, some people may say, looking at finances, I can't afford option 9, but I could probably afford option 5. You know what I mean? Like, we don't have to give them all of them, but if you give them two options,
wouldn't
two out of the three.
Divide our votes, though, that we receive? It seems like it would divide the votes that we received. And so even if, say, option 1 received the majority of votes, if it doesn't reach a certain percentage, we still lost.
That's what I was just thinking about.
Well, because you got to have over 50%, right?
Right. You have to have over 50%.
So if you had 40% vote for option 2 and 40% vote for option 2, you'd have 80% in favor of increasing. But
would you then go to a second vote, or does it then just not pass?
I've never seen
it. I don't know, because I recall seeing something like this in the past, which is only why I bring it up. But I don't know how that works in a levy issue.
It has to be on a general election. So our only chance this year is to get it on the November election. So we have to turn it in by August. It would get in the November election. So if it didn't pass, we would have to wait
another year.
I haven't looked at the 2024 election schedule. There might be something in there, but we would be pushing it out at least one more year. I'm pretty sure that we can't do, which would be great if you could do like option A, option B,
and then
option C, zero. Yeah, I don't think you can do that, but we can definitely reach out to the county and ask them about putting multiple options on the ballot and just have that information.
Kelly, just a quick question, if I can. Can we go, does it have to be 4, 8, 16, or have you done any numbers on 6?
The reason we did it in increments of the 4 is because we run 4 shifts. So we have an A, B, C, and D shift, and then the folks work 1 on, 3 off, and they have Kelly days or debit days on top of that. So for us, deployment-wise, it makes more sense to be able to fill either 1 seat a day or 2 seats.
I'm trying to think the way to sell it to the public.
Mm-hmm. Are you looking from us to get one of these options, 1 through 9, before you guys to put on the ballot? Is that what you're basically asking for?
And generally, options 7, 8, and 9, if you don't fully.
There's no way.
Yeah.
You think we could spin our wheels all year long and know that that's where we need to fill all the seats, but we don't believe they're viable or will ever make it.
The hard reality is that the business committee needs to get to work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you look at like Burlington, they have business. Anacortes has tourism and business. Mount Vernon has tourism, business, and retail. And we don't really have that. We haven't really put too much into that effort. So there has to be something to increase the business and appearance. Mm-hmm. Have some tourists, some business, some industry.
Need some industry to draw those funds in. Otherwise, you have a housing community with no resources to support it.
Exactly. It would be cool to have that, though, as far as like, I don't know if we want to do even a vote now on what an optimal number would be for this. If you guys are taking it 4, is it going to be 8 or 4? And then work on that option. But I think securing the fire department and then owning it is an awesome training ground for volunteers. Whatever number we end up with, you're going to be able to capitalize on that volunteer training ground. And yeah, I understand you lose them after so long because you're training them and they're moving on. But Skagit, and especially Cedar Woolley, could be known, if adequately done, as the primo of volunteer firefighter training into the firefighter academy. So it could be that step forward. And we could see a lot of volunteers wanting to move here, come here to be a part of the Cedar Woolley program. So it's going to handle the offset of what we're lacking.
So that's where they can go, when they're going out and banging on doors for this levy, is where they can have those conversations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's where they're gonna pick up traction, but it's gonna be a lot of door knocking and a lot of explanation and discussion with the community.
So Councilman Lavaca did put out the suggestion. Do you want to eliminate one of the options? Do you want to
I would like to eliminate 7 through 9.
I think probably 1 as well, obviously.
All that put us in a deficit need to be eliminated.
I was just about to say, maybe I'll make my starting bid and say, I think 5 seems like the logical option. It's the middle ground for what they're looking at. Makes it so that we're still solvent in 10 years, not by much, but it's still in the green. Likely by that point, I would venture to guess that 8 may or may not be a good fit, and it's a good time to reevaluate 10 years out. I think that seems like what would be logical to do to make sure that we are not running that deficit. Kelly, is there a reason why 6 would be a better choice? And it looks like that's still quite in the green at 10 years.
It being more in the green. I just did these numbers, for option 5. I just played around with the number until we got close to 0 at 10 years. So there's a multitude of options between 5 and 6. If we want to give ourselves a little bit more of a cushion, we can do that as well. The main thing, too, is to get your thoughts on what we think we can get past with the voters. So the thing that we have to include on the ballot measure, and which we've confirmed with the county, is that line 24 levy percent increase. So for option five, which we, I think we would recommend option five or six, but we have to put on the ballot 45% increase to your seizure holy property tax.
Right. And that's why my question about whether we do, because if you put 45, then you put 24. I mean, as much as you don't, the reality is, yes, we want that. But if you want something or nothing, you know, like, and it, maybe it's not even a viable option, right, off the table. But with the state of the economy, with the comments that have been coming out just now after property taxes have come out, the increases and everything else, the hard reality is you're probably going to be lucky if you get option three.
Mm-hmm. Right. Especially if it says 24% increase. Mm-hmm. That would be the minimum. If I see 45% increase, I'm not understanding what that means.
No, and the people that don't call 911 rarely are like, well, I'll take my chances. You know what I mean? I mean,
What's the cost of school on a ballot?
We pay a portion of the county's cost. So I don't know.
The more items on the ballots, then the less our costs, because we do pay a portion. As I understand, is that correct?
Yeah, general elections tend to be less expensive for that reason.
Yeah.
Special election, if we just wanted our own, definitely be a lot.
We can't do it in this case, but yeah.
I personally think 20-something percent increase will have a heck of a lot better chance of passing than a 45 or 40.
I wouldn't disagree with that. My curiosity is, will it be enough? Because it sounds like from talking to them that this still is going to have us short-staffed and burning people out, which is going to be a problem for the longevity of the service.
You either pass the levy or you don't. Yeah. That's my concern.
So yeah, if it's 45 and they don't pass, you're worse off. The thing is right now you said that 50 calls were taken over from us last year, right? At $2,200 a call, which people don't want to pay that, but $2,200 a call is $110,000. So we lost $110,000 and we're looking at increasing it by a million. So, you know, even if we've got the four and other cities are taking some of these calls, it's not like it's unacceptable to let them take some calls because we only got the call. Right. You know, nobody's going to be in their home without service and have that ability. There's always risk in life. So yeah, somebody might not be there immediately. If all of the Swiss cheeses line up and that passes all the way through where somebody has a heart attack and nobody's available to get to them, but that could happen. And we can't prevent everything by putting a bunch of dollars. So I would be thinking three would be a good two or three, but I would be acceptable to five if the council wanted to do that. But I think it's hard for 40. If you see 45, you're not understanding what you're looking at. 45% increase.
I think it'll be a hard sales pitch for them. I'm not going to disagree with you on that at all. I have a hard time saying that I want to do it. I'm more looking at the numbers of people that they have on staff, how the volunteers have been dwindling. As Sarah was saying earlier, the culture is going away of people volunteering. So I'm counting on the fact that we're going to continue to lose those numbers, not see them increase. I don't like that. I would love to see those numbers go up, but hearing the amount of training and the time it takes to onboard somebody, realistically, only someone who's probably quite interested in doing it for a career is going to do that. And how long do you stick around in a virtually unpaid position before you move on to working for, what was it, Snohomish Fire that was doing six figures starting with a nice fat hiring bonus? And how long are people going to stick around on that?
It's just easier to get a job if you have experience. So being the only volunteer training ground with the most volunteer experience and training in the county, and even if we really become well-known in the region, we draw in talent and it'll encourage people, especially if we do a great job of, you know, in the time advertising that kind of position available to young people growing up in the trades. And I've positioned the idea of bringing our old bleacher seats from down at the park to the fire training center, and then having parents and kids come there with popcorn and watch the tankers go up in flames and people put them out and things like that. And that, you know, kids, I want to be a firefighter when I grow up. How do I do that? Become a volunteer. And now you can get the training to go to Snohomish, which is fine. They don't need to all stay here, but we can train them in here. And that's going to solidify a lot of that volunteer base that we're leaning into, I think, if we can own it right.
Frank, how many dorm rooms do you have available right now? Where do they live free?
We have 13 rooms, and they do live free. They get their rent, and then in lieu of that, they work 2 to 3 shifts a week. Plus, they have to be in-house at least 4 nights. So even on their nights that they're not on the schedule, they backfill for engine responses, motor vehicle accidents, CPRs, and multiple calls at the same time.
But I know on Dukesville, you have a TV room and you have a kitchen. And
that's one of the things.
My son-in-law lived there for a few years, 3 years.
I want to go back to Brendan. I want to give you an opportunity to maybe state your thoughts or opinion regarding which option to look at.
I would think 2 or 3, just kind of mirroring what other people have said. I think if people see 45, 47, it's going to be a pretty quick no. And I think getting 4 is going to be a lot better than getting none. So I know doorbelling, it'd be a lot easier to tell people we're looking at 24 to 23. There's at least some room to discuss why it's a benefit. If you go in at 45, it's pretty hard to convince them that it's worthwhile. I would be curious to know how many, if we did the 4, how many volunteers would we have to get in order to cover what 8 would have got us? Because what I was thinking is, what if it was like a community drive? Like, you know, we're going to only ask for 4, but we really need 8. But instead of ask for 45%, you know, this is how many volunteers we need to come forward.
I think that's all dependent upon how much time those folks have to offer. Right now, a full-time individual works 8 to 9 24-hour shifts a month. And we have some of our 27 volunteers that put in 24 to 30 hours a week on top of their normal jobs. And we have some of our volunteers that put in 3 hours a week for training and a couple calls here and there. So it's all subjective, depending on that individual and how much time we can get out of them. Every time they come through the door, we're excited to have them. So
great marketing idea, Brendan. Yeah. As far as like, if you're doing the door knocking, you got a pamphlet, you also have an advertisement on there to apply for volunteer.
Yeah,
that's great. You have a QR code on there that they can go right to the website and hear all the fun stuff. It kind of takes you into the community with business. You want good business for more tax revenue, but also with parks and rec, you want something for people to do should they move here to live in there. Disc golf, you know, racetracks, skate parks, baseball, you know, a lot of trails, all that stuff. So the community's got to be kind of appealing as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if we did the 4, how long until we have to come back and ask for more?
Well, with the 4, we're still down. Is it that puts us at 12? So we're still down 12 confirmed spots filled every day. So we're already in a deficit now. If we could continue to keep these part-timers and volunteers active and increase those numbers, then we can stay status quo. So,
subject to volunteers and growth and type of pulse.
And do you have an understanding on what we were spending in 2015, 2016 on response to what we're spending now on response? Is the cost gone up to respond to an average call?
Yes.
So is there a way to...
2015, we weren't transporting.
Yeah.
We were a surge capacity transport only. So when county was out of rigs, we would sometimes do a BLS transport. I think that 2015 was our first year doing BLS transport. And I want to say we did 100 transports for the entire year.
if we're looking at 2016 and 2017, the cost of if you look at all how many calls, like this year we got 3,600, so 10 average a day, and it costs the fire department this much to be in service. You can divide that amongst the 365, right? And get an idea of each call, even if some were called off, just get an average. And has that cost gone up for each response or down? And I think that would be an important thing to weigh out. And obviously you don't have the numbers in front of you, but to show that as the community has to tighten their belt, that the fire department is looking to chew off any fat that's around. If there is any, look at how we can save on various items and tanks and any of that area so that the calls cost isn't increasing exponentially as we're asking for more money and more people. But we're within reason of the cost from 2017 to the cost of 2022. Does that make sense?
It does, but you also got to remember that if you compare then till now, we went from pretty much all 90% volunteers to we brought on 8 full-time staff. So our budget went up $1.4 million in 1 year and hasn't gone down since. So maybe 2019 till now from when we started the program. But we also have to do the flip side of, you know, prior to 2019, we were total general fund reliant, except for a few minor contracts here and there for services. And from 2019 on, we started bringing in probably $2.4 million a year in revenue that we didn't have prior to doing transport. So
that's a plus, right? Because you're generating revenue now, so you're working in the city's best interest, right? Mm-hmm. Company, obviously, but the city's best interest to help absolve that cost that's on the taxpayers with the people who actually use the service.
Correct.
So I mean, yeah, that's a plus. And if we're looking at points of like, you know, selling the 24 to the community and saying this is in your best interest, and we're working hard to reduce the burden that's already on you by doing this and this, and this is what it used to cost. We are working to tighten that up, but we do need this. And then
not just an expense center.
Yeah.
We're generating revenue and driving that revenue as best we can to try to augment, to alleviate the cost for services to this.
So Frank, is it out of line to ask your opinion on this, what you would like to see happen, concerns that haven't been addressed?
I think that what I would like, what I'm glad is that no matter what, you guys all crossed off 1 and 4. The biggest concern that I have is trying to recruit and staffing, if we were able to get any, is to bring someone to the table and say, you've got a job for 4 years. And in the fifth year, we may not be able to afford you. So I'm glad you took 1 and 4 off the table, because right now it would be hard to bring someone as a brand new person if it takes us 8 months to a year to onboard them and get them in service if they have no experience. How do we keep them? Because they're always going to be looking for that next step. And where we're already competing with the South counties of the world that are starting off at $100,000+ a year and paying bonuses and having the unlimited overtime and opportunities, we're competing with that from the beginning. So to be looking at the other ones, that is a big weight off of my chest in the beginning. I would like to see the 8, but kind of with you guys as well, I know the 16 would never happen, and the 4 or the 8 is going to be tough no matter what in the climate that we are in. So no matter what, it's going to be a battle. It's going to be a lot of collaboration. It's going to be a lot of educating, whether it's going from citizens group to citizens group, to the Rotary, to all these different folks, to gaining advocates to help us and educating them on what we need and where we've been and what we're going to do for them. I don't think anything's guaranteed. So whether it's the 23% or the 47%, when I found out that has to go on there, and that's going to be a hard sell. And I don't think this new county assessor statement is going to help us at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm glad that we're not going on the ballot next month. So there's time, but it's not a battle that I'm looking forward to, but it's going to be an educational process to be able to gain that support, an uphill battle, I think.
Well, ultimately, you know, 23 or 24% of the levy isn't 24% of your property tax. And so once people understand that, it's about 2.5-3 cups of coffee a month that you can get at Starbucks. And so you're looking at $14 an increase. I think that in explaining that, you'll have a much better time. We did 8 people in 2016, right? Or 2015? We got the ambulances in there, but 2018, we got 8 more people. And so that was 5 years ago, and we're looking at a 10-year look back. So at that time, when you guys did that, you had to sell that to the community as well, right? We put that on the...
That was assuming services are already there. So that was where we got the levy funds to pay for that. We got onboarding expenses and costs from the county to help augment that change. So it was very little out-of-pocket assistance, except for the long-term investment. And commit.
So now 5 years later, we're asking for additional people. It only goes to show the growth of the community for a short time.
I'm wondering if maybe is somebody wanting to make a motion? Are you wanting to move forward with this, or what are your thoughts?
I think, that's what your hope is, right?
I think you're going to have your best bet with 24. And then I love Brendan and Nick's idea, how you're going to present it. And hey, here's this with it too. Volunteers are amazing. We're trying to do the best for our community. So that's where I'm at. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I mean, let's put a motion out for voting on 3.
Okay. So we want to second that.
I'll second.
All right. So we do have a motion by Councilman Novaca and seconded by, Councilwoman Diamond. Any more discussion? All those in favor of putting option 3 at the 24.76% increase, put a show on the ballot. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. And so, Kelly, do you want to repeat what the next, I know you shared with us what the next steps are. Do you want to share that again so that we can be anticipating that?
Yeah. One thing just to go over real quick. Sorry, Bill, can you go back one slide? Is I know, we talked about the property tax. So we do have the impact of option 3 on there. But the school district property tax, this... the example of this home is a $447,000 home. That sounds like a lot, but that's in the neighborhood of Plainridge, and house prices have really gone up. So in case people are asking, and we can help educate them on the unfortunate issue at the county, this property, their school district tax went up $26.21 from last year. So there is slight increases, but their documentation had errors, right? So we can just want to reiterate to people as much as possible, or as much as we're being asked, that it wasn't the school district tax did not go up $1,000. But this home, the property tax increased from 2022 to 2023 was $173 a year. So just giving some context to...
It's got a lot of attention from a lot of people.
It's very unfortunate.
370 something to 1447 or 87.
So those numbers are, were not accurate. The 2022 number was not accurate. So
but just the needed, taxes didn't go down, did they, Kelly?
No, they didn't. But they didn't go up $1,000.
Right.
So
property values.
I am wondering, Kelly, is there possibly, or I don't know, Charlie, but I mean, I'm thinking that so people knowing that this is what we're going to be moving forward with, I think it might be valuable to have talking points. Is there a possibility that we could put that together so that everybody on the council could have talking points?
and maybe even questions that any of us may not be able to answer. How do we want to handle that? So it's not awkward for them, or
you can have it on your website.
We can't tell people how to vote, but we can inform people.
I think it just needs to be as transparent as possible. I'm all about transparency. Mm-hmm. And that's what people deserve.
And if I'm happy if you have any questions about property tax that you think people are going to ask, to collect those questions in whatever format is easiest for you. And you know, then work with Charlie and Frank and the mayor to write up some of those talking points, or we'll do our best to write it up in an easy to understand manner, although it's property tax. So
I'm sure the biggest is going to be the 24.76%. Mm-hmm. If we're able to explain that, that's really what I'm thinking about here, because that is really misleading. So what does that truly mean? What's that really going to cost, you know, us in our tax dollars? I think that's a biggie. And I don't know, is it inappropriate to ask for a statement from the chief to go with it?
Definitely need something that says explicitly this is from Cedro Olin's taxes, not your own at all.
Well, and it's not a 26% or 25% of our entire tax. It's on the
percentage of our school district would be smart to put in a disclaimer or explanation.
I don't think it had anything to do with the school district.
It didn't. It was in the county.
But if you had your information on your website, it's just a reference to your website for anything.
But not everybody even wants a chat. To.
No, I hear that.
All right. Is that it then? Is there anything else, Kelly?
Oh, the timeline.
Okay.
So we put this timeline together. It can change and fluctuate based on how we want to do it. We have March through May public outreach, and then hopefully in May, having the ballot measure written up for council approval. But we could switch that around, have council's approval of the ballot measure, and then do the public outreach after that. And then we want to submit to the county by June the ballot measure ahead of the deadline. We have to have it to the county by August 1st to be put on the November 8th election. But I think we want to be ahead of it because there's a lot of very specific things. So we want the county to have a lot of time if they're going to come back and say something is not valid or need changes, that we have that time to change it. We have that time to come to council and tell you the changes. So that's our preliminary timeline.
I think you should switch it like it's submitted so that we know what we're talking about when we go out to the public.
Any other thoughts on that? No, I agree with that.
Thank you, Kelly. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, everybody.
Yes, and thank you, everyone, for your input. That was a really good discussion. All right, if there is nothing
else. Are we able to discuss that? Because I threw out an email about discussing that grant program. I don't know if we have time. I mean, it's with the workshops.
We're going to be discussing that next week.
During a council meeting or during the workshop?
It's going to be on the council.
Okay. Does it make sense to discuss it in a workshop rather than in council?
Mm-hmm. So let me do this. Because it's you who's making that motion. Do you all want to? Did you all see the email? One thing. Do you want to discuss it now, or do you want to wait till next Wednesday? It's up to you.
Now is fine.
Make a motion to discuss it now.
I'd rather have the info in front of us, but if the majority wants to discuss it now, so be it.
Brendan, what's your thoughts?
I'd say let's go for it. So I'm down to talk. I read the email, so I think I'm ready for it.
So on the business committee meeting, we had a vote for the grant program, right? And so I was just wondering a little bit more on that business meeting, Sarah and Chuck, as far as how, and Joe, but how we came to 28 grants at $5,000. And then that is, I believe, directly tied into the Peter workshop, right? And so if that is going to be something that's more for the arts program of the theater workshop, or if it's going to be more for city improvements. So that was my only question.
It's not necessarily just straight 28 grants. That would be like the minimum number of them. I think originally I was talking a lower number, like $1,000. But as we looked at the cost of items, we realized that with inflation especially, that's not going to get you really far with certain projects. So we thought, well, if we make it big enough that people are able to achieve a larger project, odds are most people aren't going to hit the $5,000 limit. It just makes it so that for those larger things, it is a possibility. We're not ruling it out because there's not many, if any, programs I've found that even offer this option. So to me, that was the benefit of the higher number.
I have a question. Is it for downtown businesses who might have been hurt or impacted by COVID, or is it for art and murals and things like that? How, and then who will be deciding who gets these grants?
So I don't know how much you guys remember about what I put in the packet in, I think it was November 11th last year. We had a list of things that would be an option. It was more of a guideline, so to speak, that we came up with. I went through other cities that had something similar and picked and chose what sounded good. Some of them excluded religious organizations. I didn't really want to do that. I wanted to allow as many groups as possible to have the opportunity. I removed a couple of things. I don't remember exactly what they were. I was trying to make it just broad strokes so that we have the option for people to be creative. I was hoping that maybe some historical markers might be something that would come up. That's one that I added that wasn't in any of the other cities that I found.
You keep saying I.
Yes.
You guys were in a committee, yes. Correct? And so the committee, you guys waited.
I was not at the last meeting. I had to work, so I had no involvement.
I only saw in the minutes on September 19th, I believe, was a discussion kind of on that. Mm-hmm. So that's where I was curious, because my time on the committee is the committee came together and worked on items that then somebody like me as a chair, I went out and contacted the skate park and that stuff. But I would bring that back to the committee and say, this is what we got. And then they would all weigh in. So
the way that went was that it was Glenn and myself and Charlie that were at the last meeting of the year. So we kind of went over
there. I might have been in Mexico, maybe not.
Well, I know I was never alone. And we discussed the idea of it, talked about what we kind of had an idea of doing. And
so you proposed that same packet that was on 11-2 to the committee before it came before the council.
So that's what I'm asking. If I remember correctly, that packet came along after that, or was that at the last meeting? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, I have to get back and look. But there was a conversation at the business development committee meeting with Councillor Allen and Councillor Burns. The two of them at some point turned and asked me kind of what I thought about things. We started talking about, there was a lot of conversation that night about limited engagement in Cedar Woolley, limited upkeep of a lot of areas, and the what could we do to get people more engaged and to take better care of properties. And so they turned to me and I just said, hey, you know, we could look at a grant program. There's money allocated for economic development, there are options. So then we started talking about what that could look like. And there was a set of ideas drawn up and that was brought to the full council in a work session. I believe that was on the second. I believe that's what Councilor Burns delivered to the council at that time. It seemed to be.
The council didn't vote on it though.
No, there was no
vote. The committee didn't vote on it. And the committees are, the way they're set up in the council governance manual, they're collaborative. So it's kind of a touch point, but it's not like the legislature where it goes to a committee and it dies if it doesn't come out. So this was a discussion, it seemed to be support brought to the full council, which picked up Councillor Diamond as well in terms of that conversation. Seemed to be some interest in the council at that time. And so the next step was, all right, so we iterate this thing and get into a more formal proposal, because this is ultimately a council decision by resolution. That's what we've got on for next week. In the planning and business development committee meeting in February, All the documents that you'll see next week are in there. They're actually on the website. I'm looking at them right now. So the way it's written up, the idea was to have it very broad from discussion. So eligible applicants for grants could be individuals, non-national franchise businesses. So you wouldn't necessarily start targeting, right, because they've got other sources. But any other businesses would be eligible. Nonprofit organizations or government agencies. Grant total amount, $140,000, grants up to $5,000, kept very broad on the types of uses. And this is ultimately up to the council. So if you wanted it to go for non-COVID businesses, you can or for COVID impacted businesses, you could absolutely have that discussion. If you wanted it to go for other specific anything, I mean, it's really up to the council where that money goes. But based on the conversations that were had, this is the proposal that we're bringing forward really for dialogue and seeing where you want to go.
So at that point, it's more about dialogue, and that's what next week's council meeting would be about. Mm-hmm. But the idea is to launch it at April ahead, right after that one meeting about the arts workshop. So it seems like the dialogue would be cutting it close not to have it in another conversation or workshop like this month or last month or something like that versus so close to the area to kind of see where those parameters are, if that makes sense.
And that's actually why we brought it in November, because we were kind of seeking your interest in it and seeing if it was off base or if you all seemed good with it. And I saw a lot of nodding heads. I didn't hear any changes. So
I was into the idea. And I think if we watched that video, and we talked about it for about 8 minutes, and there was like, yeah, let's get this idea going. But then it never came back. And what I saw was in the planning and strategic meeting was a packet that Charlie presented. And where we were in there, you were in there, and obviously Chuck was in there too. And it kind of came out that it was a lot of Charlie's idea, which is great. You've worked with him in the past and whatnot, but I hadn't heard any other deliberation or idea generation other than that. And I saw that, okay, well, this is coming up pretty quick and then it's going to be voted on and it's half of the ARPA funds and it's for business development. And so is it for arts or is it for business or is there any more deliberation besides in the council? It's going to be a workshop, which is formal. So we don't have to say, Madam Mayor, may I speak, and or ask a question, and then talk along the line. So
it's not half of the art.
So it's there's
the economic development.
So there was 300 in the economic development fund for building business structure and economic stability.
Yeah, I just want to make sure everybody knows it's not half of the 3 million.
Yeah.
Substantially.
We're not going to put the rest of the 3 million, the rest of the money that's there, is that something that we can now allocate towards the economic development, or is that pretty much used up within the budget as well? So
it's
we're looking at
how allocated.
So we're looking at half of the money that's available for the economic development fund that will be used for a program launched right after the workshop that could be used for various things unless there's parameters kind of set. Like I imagine like the mural would be awesome to see that mural redone. And I mentioned that in the meeting, and as well as signs pointing people into Cedar Woolley or cleaning up town or the fencing. But if we see a mural that's completely contrary to what we're looking at, but we've made these agreements or signed into the thing without fully understanding the parameters or the ideas, then we could see a transformation within the community. I believe in the workshop or in our strategic planning meeting, you said that the community's kind of got to be willing to accept some radical stuff, such as in Squim, they knitted stuff and they put that on the lamppost and it stayed there for a set amount of time, which might be a good idea and it might fit well for Squim. But is that what we're going to use that grant money for, and how would the community who also is involved with that receive that? So that's why I figured during a workshop like this would be a good opportunity to hear what the people who made that up came up with or why that was there.
I guess I had some faith in the community members that usually volunteer and step up to do things that they would probably be continuing to have the same kind of values that we do here. And so we would probably see a lot of things getting cleaned up downtown, whether it be the murals painted or I was hoping to see some markers go up for history was something that I kept thinking of. But I thought of Joellen on that one with the museum. I figured that groups like that might have the opportunity.
We have the Arts Commission too. So they may be wanting
something
as well.
And I think that would be a possibility from that.
Because I liked the idea when we were talking about it. I loved the idea about,
the businesses being able to potentially fix their awnings and beautify downtown. Yeah. And so that's where I thought that this was going to, but it kind of, I just want to make sure that how are we presenting this? Is it structured? Because all of that, I mean, you beautify the downtown, more businesses want to come in and, you know, so I'm trying to help them who might not have the extra money to fix up their outside, but now there's a grant available and we can do this. That really excites me, but
there needs to be parameters.
Yeah.
Like,
so yeah. I imagine like a garden in a yard. Most of the community agrees that well-trimmed garden is beautiful. But another person might think, well, in my tree, I want to hang a bunch of spoons because that's art to me and I really like that. And some in the neighborhood might like that, but most don't. So that's why you want parameters on something such as this, right, just to make sure that maybe somebody with a very abstract thought doesn't want to paint a big mural of maybe the Care Bear Club, right? And then it's like, we're kind of accepting community as art and giving them the freedom to do that without a structured vetting process or a structure on, because 140 for business grants could do a lot for drawing in business and increasing morale within our own community. I just was wanting to see that the business committee had good dialogue on that. And then when they brought it before the council, it was pretty well discussed. So it wasn't just your idea. It was the committee's idea that brought this kind of together to bring to us, right, because that's what I trusted was happening.
And I think that it's, you're talking about putting parameters on it. Yes, that needs to happen, but also the decision making. So if, you know, spoons in trees isn't, you know, ringing our bells, then, you know, we can say no to that. So we do have some say so over where we want to see that money go. I really appreciate the comments that are being made regarding allowing businesses to really update their own buildings. I like that idea. Maybe that's a good start. That in and of itself is the beautification, which I can tell you sitting on the Arts Commission, that is something that they bring up over and over again. That is the word they use, beautification. Mm-hmm.
Madam Mayor, would some of this have to go through the design and review committee? Do we have one?
We don't have one.
I thought we were going to get one.
I'm not familiar with that. I haven't heard that.
It came up a while
back. Or new business. There's a lot of empty businesses downtown. New businesses can apply for those grants to do updates or whatever they might need.
Oh,
because they need to have.
You know, that's business development to me, is helping these new businesses come in and giving them a reason. You're bringing in people. You're bringing in new businesses. You're making downtown. You're beautifying it. Giving people reasons to come here, and you're increasing sales tax revenue, which is also going to help fund the fire department.
I actually think that maybe it was Monique. I'm trying to remember. Someone suggested doing like cardboard cutouts that they can put in the empty windows just to make it so that it looks a little bit nicer while it's vacant. Just something to church it up, so to speak. But anything that makes that downtown look nicer is a step in the right direction. Yes, I only got it as a band-aid, and it is kind of funny, but I got the picture of like the old-fashioned cowboy window or something, but hopefully that's not what they were picturing.
Well, I know that in 2022, like I said, we didn't pass anything from any of the committees through the council except for this one thing. So if this is the one thing the council puts forth in agreement with the business committee, I just want it to be good. There are a lot of ideas that came forth that never made any headway. And if that's what we're here to do, is to create a better community, as the council represents the 12,000 people here, and then the mayor obviously represents that in a CEO executive level. And then the council is kind of there to kind of like, yeah, you are representing us and steering that kind of along to make sure that that all works out. And that's kind of how the whole thing works out. So making sure that ideas, that if that's their legacy for 2022, hopefully 2023, we have a much better experience on the committees with running down some ideas and having a little bit more form there, then let's make that one a really memorable one.
And I probably wasn't explicit enough in November in the, hey, what do you guys think? What are your ideas? What do you want to see change? What do you want to add? What do you want to take away? Because that is important. You're right. I should have been much more explicit in that sense, that I was concerned at that point. Are you interested? Are we working up the right tree here? I'm glad to hear that you all are interested in helping the businesses downtown, letting them use this in part for cleaning up that was something I was concerned about it being legal, actually. And so I was happy that Charlie confirmed we were allowed to do that. Because a lot of times, to my knowledge, governments can't necessarily get involved in that. That was one of the things we were running up against was, what can we spend the money on?
You know, I've heard all of this before. For the last 7 years, I've heard the same conversation.
Yeah.
And nothing ever happened. These landlords own these buildings. It's their responsibility to clean them up. And it's not going to happen unless we put the pressure on them. I don't know how we do that, but you're not going to accomplish anything unless you get them involved. And they're going to raise their, if they have to put out money, they'll raise their rent, you know, for the people who are there, right? It's something that's been talked about for the last 7 years, and a lot of money went to the downtown group, and I don't know where it went. Was it blown or something?
They used it, but they didn't jet.
They didn't do nothing.
Well, they did, but they didn't continue to generate funds to keep going. But this is a situation where the business committee has brought this forward along with the finance committee. I think they worked on it too. So the committee has brought this forward and they want to see this move forward. And so I think that's a good idea.
I don't think the city should, the city should pay for all this. I think the property owners should. The only building I've seen that looks a lot better and they've done work on it all. And I watched them clean that up, all the outside and the windows, and it looks nice.
So, and that's good input. You know, it's good to hear that. So nothing's being decided here, just as so you know. Nothing's being decided here, but it's good input knowing that you probably would rather see the funding go someplace else, and if so, where would you like to see that funding go?
Well, I think the awnings is a good thing, but still, that's property. But it would be a lot. Some of them look real bad. You can see Scott looking through them. The city, to me, at the dusk when the lights come on, it's depressing. You see those dingy lights, and it's almost dark. They don't put out a whole lot of light, and the streets are bare. It'd be nice if you had some shrubbery or something, you know, down the side. It seems to look bad.
We used to have trees.
Yeah.
But lighting may be something that the council maybe want to talk about. Maybe that's where they'd like to see some of that funding go. Maybe they want better lighting downtown.
And we do have the other half of the funds still, even if we went forward with this project as it was. We've only spent half the funds on the project if we continue. So things like that would probably be a good idea. I'm not necessarily disagree with you on the fact that businesses should be paying for it themselves. My hope was that we light a spark, so to speak, and get people to start taking a little more pride in that area and keeping it cleaner and picking it up, making it nicer, making their buildings nicer.
Did you get it done? I'll take you out and buy you $100.
I'm calling you that. That's on video right there. You weighed in on that meeting or on the meetings they had for the grant program. Is that correct? And then so you were able to throw out ideas. So was it just one meeting you guys had, or was it a series of meetings of discussions to come up with the packet that was proposed by the council?
So that was the one meeting, and that's part of why I brought it right to the council, is because I was asking for another meeting, and Charlie was saying, well, I don't really have the ability to give you another meeting this year. So I asked, can we just bring it to the council and let them, you know, am I on base with this? Are we doing something worthwhile, or are we wasting time?
Sure.
Who will then accept the grants? Who's deciding?
That hasn't been determined.
Yeah, ultimately this is up to the council, but in what we wrote up, and it's really written up for discussion, so this is great. And there are like three questions I want to challenge you all with next week, but before that I'll answer the question. What it's written up as right now is five people, including the three members of the city council's planning and business development committee, and then two other community members who would be appointed by the mayor and confirmed by the council. It would be like the selection committee, but it could be any group that you decide. So that's just to get the conversation started, because we had to have something in.
I think that's fair. You're utilizing the council, which is the representation of the public, regardless of who that would be.
Especially with the concerns about making sure that it sticks with the theme that we have going as a city, or our values, that would help ensure that having actual input from the council.
Which we need a design and review committee. Which we used
to sounds have. Like that's what we're going to put into place, sort of. They'll make the decision.
Yeah,
if the council chooses to go that route.
The three questions I'd love you all to think about for next week could really help. You're going to see in here what we've done is the conversation that happened in the fall. We took your ideas and we put them all on the list. So just about everything you've mentioned, lighting, murals, it's all in here. These are all ideas and eligible things for the grant, but we can keep it really broad with these just being ideas, and we keep it open to whatever comes in, or we can narrow it. So first question is what do you really want to see funded? The second question is how much per grant? So if you're talking awnings, my understanding is awnings are pretty pricey. They're going to be more like $15,000 or more. Do you want to entice businesses to put up a match to this? Can they afford to do that? Will they do that? Or do you want to pay for like the whole thing? In which case, you may not want to limit it to $5,000 per grant. You might want to limit it to like $15,000 per grant. Then you've got to consider how many are you going to see. So how much per grant would be the second thing to think about. And then who selects, which I think we've just talked about a bit. But so that's still important.
Possibility, too, that instead of this being put out in the form of grants, that the council themselves could make a decision as to where they want to see that money go. And then we put out bids looking for, like, if they were interested in doing awnings or interested in doing lighting, we would get an estimate of what that is, and then the council could decide. So it's a council decision. Is that a possibility? I don't even know if that's something the council is interested in doing at all, but is that a possibility?
If it's public infrastructure, yeah, absolutely, we can do that. So like lighting, for example, if it's our lighting on the street, we can do that. If it's, we want to fix, you know, this awning on this business, that becomes problematic for government picking out single individual businesses. But if we said, hey, all you businesses in this area, we want to offer a grant for awnings in this area, and people can apply, that would be it.
Why don't we let the businesses say what they need in order to make their business better on the outside and what they feel is necessary? Let them write in what they'd like, and then we set a grant, and if we're able to accommodate some of that, that's better than nothing. So let's let them tell us what they need and what they're going to do. They might have a brother who puts up awnings and he's going to give them an incredible discount. I don't want to stop them from being able to utilize the brother.
So I would like to see something like a 2/3 match, because knowing that we're just strict anyway. So if it's 15 grand, they only have to put up 5 grand for a whole new awning. We put 50 if they even do the awning. So they could do anything.
I'd like them to just be able to get the money, because if we have to match it, some businesses can't afford to do that, and then they're not going to be doing it. With $5,000 is better than nothing. But if I have to match $5,000, I might not be able to do that.
And also,
I was just going to say, it goes back to the fact. Chuck brought up a really good point. A lot of those buildings are owned by people who don't even live in Cedar Woolley. They're just renting them.
But to be fair, the people who have the businesses care about what their outside look like. And if they can apply for a grant and tell the person who owns the building, I'm going to be doing this, this will be great, would you allow this? They might help them out more.
Can we do like a special allowance? Like if they can't get a grant from the business owner to match to a third of that, because it's increasing the value of the building. I mean, frankly, it's to their benefit, and they're only paying a small amount of it. But if they just can't do that, then the business owner could get that $5,000 grant. But if they could, for whatever reason, get the business to go in on that, that would take that money and stretch it a long ways.
Good, but it's not fair to ask that of the businesses who were already hurting during COVID. I think it's not fair to ask them to bring money to the table. They have what they have, and if they can apply for the grant, they want it. If they don't, they don't have to.
So one thing I want to say, so I think Charlie brought up a really good question. He says, what do you really want to do? That sounds like that's a discussion that's occurring right now. So that was the first question. The second question is,
how much per grant? And, you know, one option is you don't have to have a limit. You could say, hey, we have $140,000, come apply for it. Now, granted, you might get a whole bunch of huge grant requests and find that you can only fund like one. So that could be really tough, but you could do that.
And the third question?
Who selects? Who makes the decision? So, you know, if the council wants to be hands-on with this, I would recommend, for example, if you did put all the money out there and just said, come and get it and see what people ask for, that the council be the decision maker on that. You could defer that to everybody else. But the reality is, if we're signing a contract anyway for over $50,000, it's got to come to you. So it makes sense for that to be the council.
And I think it's really exciting to think about the April 19th event. I think that might really generate some great interest in wanting to do some exciting things here in City Wally. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm sorry, John, go ahead.
It's hard to talk to the owner because buildings are owned by more than one people, and a group of people own. You could sit down and talk to the owners of those buildings, and maybe you could work out something. But my gosh, I don't think it's going to happen. I just don't. I wish you would.
So
I just take the dynamite and roll the whole damn town and start over.
Part of my concern was getting those bigger ticket items funded by people or us putting the money into three or four projects for somebody. So that's part of why I wanted it to be so broad with being able to do murals or other things, just history in general, anything you can think of to make it look a little nicer downtown, because sometimes the small things add up. I wasn't necessarily expecting it to be a big one. If that's what you all want to do, I get it. There's plenty of Onyx downtown I see leaking and having other issues. I'm sure we could walk around downtown, call this, come up with 20 other things we think we should spend the money on too. But I'm hoping to see this go a lot further or be spread out more so that we're not ending up with a whole bunch of money going to one or two projects. But is that what you all were thinking was better?
No, I'm not. So COVID was difficult for a lot of businesses, but to give a business a large amount of money just because is not, in my mind, a wise idea. Smaller ability to beautify the town. Some of that goes to businesses, some of that goes to the community as far as like shrubs, like Chuck was saying, it's a hard sell to say a lamppost or something like that, because that's expensive. And anything that the city does is expensive. So business owners doing it themselves, it does stretch that dollar. But it's about beautifying the whole as a whole to inspire and create morale.
Yeah. One of the stipulations we did put in it, I think I brought this up at that meeting, was that it is not to cover labor unless there is not a reasonable ability for you to find someone to do it. In other words, this is meant to be people volunteering their time.
In that, you end up with the challenge with labor quality, I gotta say. So, and that brings you back to like the art idea. It was like, well, I think if I do this and trade this thing, it's gonna work out. But then when you get there, you realize, oh, they put a bunch of spoons in the tree. It sounded like they were gonna do a metallic sculpture or something, and it wasn't exactly what they did at all. But you're stuck with it. So, it's you gotta look at quality, craftsmanship, skill size.
I'd like to see, so does that mean that if I said that I wanted to paint a building that the painter says, oh, okay, but this is the cost for the paint and this is how much, so I couldn't get it done then because I'm not going to go out there and be able to.
You know, I guess that is how it's currently worded, is that would restrict it. And we can broaden that wording or make it suggested that it's not for labor. That's something I was kind of curious what you all would think about, because
you run into the same issue with the awnings, because the majority of some owners just can't.
Well, and
put up the awnings, and they're not capable.
I think that would fall under
skilled labor.
Yeah, if it's something that you can't do yourself, if it's something you're not capable of doing, I believe that would fall under the wording that we have. Am I correct in that?
I believe so. I have to
check. Okay, it's been a while since I've read through the whole thing and written what we did. I read a lot of these, I'm going to be honest. So it was a ridiculous amount of reading through what different cities had done to kind of get an idea of what might go into that. Yeah,
it says grant funds are provided for project materials except in circumstances where specialty labor not locally available is needed to complete the project. So that's the way it's written.
Maybe we should remove it to not locally available.
Yeah, I'd like to be able, if they found a source and they could use it, I'd like for them to be able to pay for that as part of their grant if they were able to do it. Hinder them.
think it's the only way you'll get anything done is talk to the owners. And I know one group in town, when this COVID thing, they were shut down and none of them didn't charge them any rent. And there is a few good landlords doing, but you ain't going to make no headway unless you make a deal with them. Mm-hmm. You can't just go and do what you want to do to their building. It doesn't work. I wish you luck. I'll buy you that damn dinner too, son, when I see all this happen.
Almost 8 o'clock. You got three good questions to think about, so this conversation can continue next Wednesday and look forward to that. Yeah. Yes.
Just really quickly, one, April doesn't have to be a hard and fast deadline for launching this. So, you know, if we need more time, take it.
Is that April 19th?
April 19th is when we have Peter Kagiyama coming to kind of get a lot of collaboration around ideas going in the community. And ideally, we would launch a grant program like on the heels of that, but we don't have to. Like, independent of that, there's actually a grant that's part of that workshop. It's a $500 grant, and somebody gets it and they go out and they do a project. In the community, and it's voted on by the room. There'll be like 10 different projects that are on the list that don't get funded. And those people will go out and start doing stuff, some of that.
With parameters?
We don't, the community sets the parameter. I mean, it's basically the community can do whatever's legal. So
on that one, it seems like that they would have the ability, like having that grant go rollover right after that. I would like to see what the ideas are at that workshop and what the community is coming up with, because you don't know. And like you said, I looked into Peter a bit at different areas that he's worked in, and some of it's very practical and some of it's kind of far out. And I think you mentioned one, marrying the city, right? To marry the city, do you get alimony if you get divorced? I mean, are we legally bound? I mean, is that even an ethically sound thing? And is that what we want to be doing? So that's just one of many different things that maybe he is inspired with his creativity. And so to know what is inspired within the creativity of that workshop, that would kind of help define the parameters of the grants going forward. But without seeing what people might come out with those ideas, or what he might inspire other people into thinking forward, we just don't know.
I'm curious as well to see what comes out of the community. Yeah, we don't.
So that would be the good part of the council having some oversight, that approving them.
Or having
put together a committee.
Just one last thing on ARPA. I mean, we're not going to see ARPA again. So this is a really valuable opportunity. And to council member Owen's point, you know, this has been talked about a lot, but I think the difference now is that there's actually money available to do something. And so I think it's important to pick this wisely and make sure that's impactful. So I really appreciate the conversation.
I appreciate you guys willing to motion that forward and to discuss it. I would like to have some idea before we go into council. We're kind of in a forum that's uncomfortable, and it is uncomfortable. Honestly, this is a lot more comfortable. It's a lot more.
Really having great city out here.
In reality, it's as far as where I'm coming from, whenever we're talking about funds for economic development, business development, I'm personally not thinking about a mural, and I'm not thinking about somebody coming by and sweeping the sidewalks. I'm thinking of how can we provide for businesses an opportunity that they can take advantage of to grow their business, to bring people into their stores, to increase foot traffic, to beautify their businesses, which is in turn going to beautify our city, which is in turn going to bring people into their stores, which is going to create sales tax revenue, which is going to help fund our departments and the infrastructure that we so badly need. So I'm just looking at the bottom line, big picture of where is this money going to be useful, and not the, I want to paint flowers on the building.
We have so many advertisements.
We have a lot of innovative businesses here.
Correct. That would be advertising would be, that can bring people in us.
It's not just shoppers, though. It's not just sales tax. It's talent. Right. It's, I mean, people coming in with incredible ideas to create a business. We got that park trail. We put up an electric bike rental, or somebody does that, and breweries along the way, which we voted on. That's fun activities, and that's creativity, or talent as engineers, or new firms.
And then Frank can go pick up those bikes when he's going on the calls down the road and driving them back because they all disappear.
Thank you, by the way.
Okay, so it's almost 8 o'clock. You have something to think about. This is really, I agree, this is really a great discussion. Fascinating. And Brandon, do you have one last word? We've kind of excluded you from this discussion.
Got 1 minute.
Nope, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay, with that, we're adjourned. Have a good night, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.